Okay, thank you. Very warm welcome from my side as well. Someone asked me to adjust the camera because they want to see the top of my hat. Here it is. Okay, great to be here tonight with you. Very warm welcome to those I already met, at least in the chat box to my right. And a very warm welcome to all of you who are new to Sangha Live, who haven't been sitting with me. I'm very much looking forward to being with you all tonight. And as you might have heard, we almost start the upcoming week because tonight's session beautifully links in with the theme of the next week. We're going to start tonight with a reflection and a meditation on ideals and on goals and how we can actually turn them into something benefiting, supportive, rather than something which puts pressure on us and makes us actually being in conflict with ourselves. But before we start, or before I start reflecting on my thoughts on ideals and goals, I really wish us to calm down. I wish us to settle, and I wish us to potentially embody everything else, which I will be saying later in the upcoming meditation. So my invitation for you is to find yourself a comfortable position. And actually, before we're going to drop ourselves, allow body, heart, and mind to drop into samadhi, to drop into practice of collecting ourselves, I wish to give you a couple of inspirations, words, qualities you could potentially be practicing with this evening. So find yourself a comfortable position. If you want to, you can close your eyes or just lower your screen, your gaze away from the screen. And allow the eyes to really soften and unfocus. Nothing to see at the moment, just me sitting here with closed eyes, nothing spectacular. So, and just the invitation to your lovely, beloved bodies to fully arrive on the cushion, on the chair, on the floor, wherever you are at the moment. We can cherish these moments of meditations, those moments of the day where there is nothing to do and no one to be. And particularly in the beginning of a meditation, we often hear the echo of all the many things we were thinking about, all the many conversations we had during the day or the past days. And even the body might still vibrate with impulses to do something, to move, to shift. And this is all right, that's quite fine. We just don't react on those impulses. It's a storm in the water glass. And if we give it enough spaciousness, enough time, it will eventually settle down. You can invite your breathing to support this process of settling down, finding some ease, some groundedness. By gently guiding your inhales towards those places within the body which actually would benefit from opening a little bit with the next inhale. Receiving the nourishment of breathing. Gently breathe into the areas which want to open up, to broaden, to widen. And equally as much, every exhale could be an invitation or some area of the body, some tension, some restlessness to dissolve into the ground or the space around us. And you could either continue just this, to follow this process of opening, broadening the body with the inhale and inviting some of the tension to dissolve downwards to the earth with the exhale. You might want to pick up an inspiration for today's meditation. Could be a word, a quality like peace or freedom, warmth, kindness, care. It could be compassion or equanimity, balance. Or your heart might resonate with some other quality, something which is dear to you tonight, this evening, something which matters. Something which has the potential to support you, nourish you, benefit you in the next upcoming 20 minutes. Linger with the question for a couple more inhales and exhales. What quality could you bring to your meditation this evening? Patience, spaciousness, joy, appreciation. Gentleness, tenderness, surrender. Pick up what is helpful for you, what makes your heart resonate. And if you have a doubtful or restless mind, it might shift from one quality to the other. Just pick one and just test it, see the effects of what it might have on your practice. Don't worry too much. And with this quality in the heart mind, we could just ask ourselves, how would it be to be sitting with this quality, to embody it within our posture? Sitting with care, sitting with a sense of spaciousness. What small little changes would you need to adjust to this quality? What ways could we offer the body a little bit more freedom? Or if your quality is appreciation, how would the body change its posture if someone would look at it with a sense of appreciation, care, love, compassion, tenderness, friendliness? How would it react if someone would offer you his or her presence in such a way? We can either bring a quality to our posture, bring a quality to our body, look at the body from a perspective of a certain quality, or we can actually receive the quality from within our bodies. And the question this time would be, where in your body, in what part, in what area of the body can you get a sense? A small sense, maybe, of a little balance, some openness, some spaciousness, some tenderness, whatever what the quality is you're looking for. Allow the mindfulness to gently travel through the body. And settle wherever you find the smallest amount of such a quality embodied already. There might be the tenderness in the palms of your hands. There might be the equanimity, the stability, the groundedness in the uprightness of your spine. There might be a sense of freedom, openness. When you notice how your entire body is held, surrounded, embraced by infinite space. There might be the tenderness, the care. The love, the appreciation within the two lips so softly touching each other, with the eyelids so gently, ever so lightly closing the eyes. But we might lose this connection with the quality many, many times, just as we lose our connection with the breathing, lose our connection with the physical sensations. And we're very much invited to just journey with our attention through our bodies and reconnect with the quality within. Or if you find it more helpful, to re-establish the quality by gently bringing the quality to your body. Actively embodying the quality, actively looking at the body from a certain perspective. We can actually connect the quality with the breath itself, which is such a much loved object of meditation, the breathing. And my question to you would be, how could you embody the quality, the love, the care, the tenderness, the patience, the stability, the balance? How could you embody these into the breathing? How would it be to breathe in a very caring way? Every inhale, an act of caring for the body. Every exhale, an act of freeing up the body. So that this quality is nothing far from you, nothing distant, but something you can right here and right now fully embody. And whenever this quality is noticeable, ever so gently, ever so lightly, it might not be a full-grown sense of freedom, but maybe there is a flicker of it. And then you are very much invited to appreciate that, to take notice of those small flickers of love within the heart, of those moments where you get a sense of ease, peace, calmness within the being. Drink them in, enjoy them fully, appreciate their presence. And when we come out of the meditation a moment, don't do it in a hurry. We're never in a hurry in our meditation practice. Why should we? I invite you to come out of meditation, start moving, gently moving your body, with again asking the question, how can I move the body in a caring way, a loving way, an appreciative way, or if your quality was a different one, in a calm way, in a balanced way. And gently start moving maybe the hands and the feet, the shoulders. Maybe you want to move the hips. And feel free to stretch out, to yawn, to sigh, whatever it takes to bring the body back to this room you're in. And when you feel ready, you make the transition to this actual room. You open up your eyes, come back to the screen. Okay, this was a hands-on experiment on what I actually would like to reflect on with you tonight. If I look into Buddhist practice or mindfulness practice, it actually does not matter much, any religious or spiritual practice, we have there a lot of ideals. We have there a lot of ideals, and they can be an immense support, and they can be an immense source of pressure and suffering. And so I thought I would like to dedicate tonight's reflection on the ideals and the places of goals in our practice, and how we actually, any one of us, can turn them into something beautiful, something beneficial, something supportive, with a little bit of wisdom and a little bit of inquiry. To understand this process, I would like to start with differentiating the what of our practice and the how. What we practice is very much the question, what do I pay attention to? Yeah. And we look for the right method, we look for the right technique, we look for the most convincing philosophy, we look for the most convincing spiritual idea we can get. And if you decided to go that down in the mindfulness path, the Buddhist path, the what would be mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the breathing, mindfulness of the feeling tones, and so on. Yeah. And we can get very focused on the question of what should I be practicing? What should I be doing? And the other question, which we can almost forget, is the question, how? How do I do these things? How am I mindful? How am I practicing meditation? And I wonder whether you ever explored in mindfulness practice how you pay attention. What is the quality of your attention like? And you will be surprised how much of a difference that can make. I'll make one small example. All of us, or most of us, I would say, can breathe in a natural, relatively relaxed way. Yeah? We usually do not take much notice of our breathing. And that's a real blessing. I think those who need to take notice of their breathing, they're going through a lot because we're just breathing so often. There happens a curious thing for many people. If they start to pay attention to their breathing, something in this way of paying attention, something in this quality of paying attention shifts, and the breathing body becomes tense and breathing becomes challenging. So there is a quality in the paying attention to something which is actually contracting something in the being. Another thing is you might have noticed in mindfulness practice, or if you're following the Buddhist path in the Satipatthana Sutta, with all those suggestions we could pay attention to, there are so many. What should I go to the body or the breathing? Should I be mindful of my walking, or should I be mindful of my talking? We have a lot of opportunities to practice. Have you ever asked, yourself, how does it make me feel to pay attention to my breathing? How does it make me feel paying attention to walking? Yeah. So, and this is, I think, one of the most discerning, most of the one path-giving questions we can ask in our mindfulness practice, to be mindful of the quality of our mindfulness. Because often we think mindfulness is neutral observance, yeah, just looking at something, and it's definitely not. Mindfulness, it's just like as if you're having glasses on, which are originally colorless, but our habits and our patterns, they color the lenses of mindfulness. Mindfulness comes with its own, almost to say, added on agenda, with its own added on intentions, paying attention to that, not paying much attention to this. Yeah. Mindfulness is a tool, a very powerful tool, but we need to learn how to use it. Yeah. If I give you a hammer is a tool, and you can do with a hammer, you can do something good. You can build a house, you can build a shed, you can construct something. Or if you don't know how to use it very well, you will just beat yourself on your own thumb, and that will hurt. And it's the very same thing with mindfulness. We need to be not only mindful, but aware of the effects of our mindfulness practice. Because what does mindfulness do? It's a selective process. Paying attention to something brings it into the foreground of awareness, and not paying attention to something else and brings it to the background of awareness. And guess what? That has a difference, makes a difference in our experience. If I pay a lot of attention to my anger, this could lead to the being of being able to contain that anger, and that could lead potentially to reactivity. And that could eventually lead to me snapping at some person close by. So it might be much more intelligent to redirect my attention, be mindful of my hands, of my feet, of the body moving, something like this. So to notice that what I bring into the foreground of my attention matters, and I want to be wise about the choices. What do I want to have in the foreground, and what do I want rather to have to shift into the background? And it's rather interesting that we have, I believe, almost an infinite number of experiences available in this very moment. I could be aware of the noises in this room. I can look at the screen. I can feel my feet on the floor. I can think about yesterday and tomorrow. I can see the colors in here. So many, many, many different things. And yet we are paying attention to a very small number. Yeah. And such an interesting question. Why are we singling this out, giving this experience importance, and not giving importance to other experiences? And there are habits of paying attention we really need to become aware of. Why am I emphasizing this? Why am I emphasizing this and not looking at that? And this is so important because what we pay attention to impacts our well-beings, guides our actions, and guides our future impulses. And the Buddha said it very, very clearly, and you might notice, you might remember this quote from other sessions. Whatever someone frequently thinks and ponders upon, that will become the inclination of the mind. Whatever we allow continuously to roam through our being, yeah, will eventually translate itself into actions of into real physical actions, into what comes out of our mouth in the form of speaking, and what we actually think about. So I want to really know what brings calm, ease, peace, insight, and understanding. Yeah, what do I need to pay attention to so that these beautiful qualities develop? And if I pay attention to something and I notice, oh, this brings me agitation, fear, irritation, strong desire, whatever it is, restlessness, maybe this is not the way to do things, not the way to pay attention to. What can I pay attention to which would not emphasize, strengthen those experiences even more? Now we come to the part with the ideals, because paying attention comes from intentions. Intentions guide attention. Our views, our beliefs, our assumptions about ourselves and the world, they impact what we pay attention to. And I'll give you two small examples. There are ton loads of your own experience. If I assume, make the assumption, all flowers should be red, I will particularly notice the yellow ones. You all know the example of the, I think it's a pink ice bear, where you get told by a scientist not to think about the pink ice bear. And this is where the mind continuously will go to. Yeah? So assumptions or beliefs, if I believe I'm supposed to be a kind and nice and sweet and gentle all the time, I will particularly notice the times I'm not. If I believe I'm supposed to be mindful all the time, I will particularly notice the times I'm not mindful. I bet we all had this experience in our meditation at least once, where we think, oh, I'm supposed to be with my breathing. And I notice how many times I'm actually drifting off in some random thought. Now, speaking about the ideals, if our practice, what we do here, what we do on our cushions, what we do in order to grow in a spiritual sense, in a personal sense, if all this is rooted in the core belief, I'm not good enough, or alternatively, there's something wrong with me, I need to fix something. How does this impact our practice? What is the result of this assumption? I believe we are getting very, very negative and critical about ourselves. We will actually highlight and point out everything which still confirms that I'm still not good enough, or that there is still something wrong with me. We are actually, this small assumption will over and over and over reconfirm itself. There's also the almost, that's what the Buddha called ignorance or delusion, this idea that there could be potentially an ideal version of ourselves, and my spiritual task is to get there. And the mind has this beautiful capacity to dream and to think into utopias and into ideal versions of almost of you and me and the world and everything. And we can actually imagine how we should be. And then we compare the ideal to the current situation and say, nah, not acceptable. How you are, just not acceptable. Too weak, too slow, too unmindful, too not concentrated enough, not kind enough, not loving enough, or not caring enough, whatever it is, because the ideal is the benchmark. And we think we could actually not only hit it once, but be it continuously. Yeah. So the result is that if we come from this place of, or this core belief of not good enough, having to fix myself through practice, we will highly be capable to finding more flaws about ourselves, finding what is not working properly in our lives, and continue to imagine ways in which we think things would work better. So mindfulness actually becomes the burning lens for imperfections, and potentially, depending on how much mindfulness goes inwards or outwards in this sense, the burning lens for the imperfections of the others in the world. We are supporting a negative stance about things here. Well, however it works out for you, the result most certainly is more dukkha, more pressure, more stress, more unhappiness. So if we measure ourselves against an ideal, how we should be, how we could be, we can only fail. And the process of self-improvement will always be an incomplete one. So we're bound to fail over and over and over again. And some of us actually want to be numb. Yeah, mindfulness gets our capacity to be mindful gets better over time. And this beauty, actually, it would be such a beautiful thing if the habit of the mindfulness would not be to go there and to reconfirm over and over again how incomplete we are. There's no stage better. There's no soil which the inner critic would love better than mindfulness. Because it can 24/7, it can observe how incomplete we are, and it can just point it out again and again. So this, for me, this is not the way. This is not the way we should be practicing, from this idea of not enough and therefore having to become more. And therefore, we start differently. I think we should start a different practice, or at least invite in a different practice. And it's the practice of acceptance. And well, I suppose I need to teach this because I have been struggling with the acceptance process during my own path for so long. Yeah, just acceptance, just keep it aside. I'm doing the real stuff. I'm doing the concentration stuff, and I'm doing the wisdom stuff, and all those almost things which bring me above this swamp, the swamp in the inner being. Just bring me above that, above a level which I can actually think and control and be in touch with, and bring me some sense of a spiritual attraction. And then you hurt your knees, and then you bump against something, and then eventually there comes the point in a practice where you say, well, it just doesn't seem to work without acceptance. It just doesn't seem to be complete without the friendliness. And hand on heart, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to be acceptant of this being, of its incompleteness, of its not ideal version. And I guess that's a very natural moment, a very even humbling moment to say, well, I've been through a lot in my practice. What I don't know is how to be friendly and accepting about myself. And then you start exploring, and it starts with a sense of accepting humanness, accepting that this being is not an ideal, and it's not meant to be an ideal, and it's not meant to be perfect. Yeah, it's the Buddha said the wisdom is in the waking up to the fact that all this is causes and conditions, and it's shifting continuously. An ideal is a fixed state. Yeah, an ideal is something which is same all the time, and we can't get there because we're such variant creatures, we're such moving, dynamic creatures. How could we ever be an ideal? So we will be kind one day, and the next day the causes and the conditions for the kindness won't be there so much. So we're not embodying the ideal any longer. So if we start working with kindness and acceptance, with this human nature of ours, not perfect yet, will never be perfect, still trying, still failing. Samuel Beckett said, try again, fail better. That's a much more gentle approach to say, I'm not giving up. I have no intention of doing that, but I'm not thinking I could be perfect either. And that's the acceptance. To develop the capacity to be with what is in our bodies, in our breathing, in our hearts, in our minds, and it's there. And I'm not fighting it. It has its place, it belongs just because it's there. And once we're rooted in such acceptance, we can ask a different question then. And that's the onward leading question. What would bring a little more happiness, ease, lightness, stability to the being? Yeah. Of course there's turmoil, of course there's suffering. And guess what? We're on a path where the Buddha actually said, we want to end the suffering, but not because we think we could be ideal people, but be actually out of this sense of kindness. And the sense of kindness happens here and now, in this very situation. What could in this very situation bring a little more happiness, ease, lightness, stability to the being? So actually, for me, growth, learning comes out of a sense of self-respect, of a deep sense of caring for this being. And it's very much the same for me to care for this being and care for other beings. And I will explain in a minute why I think so. We might all have been growing up with the idea that if we push and if we're hard against ourselves, that this is the way to improve things, that willpower is the tool to get us going. And if we're not walking the spiritual path or any other path properly. This is because we're not putting enough pressure on ourselves. I believe if any growth out of this is happening, it's happening out of a sense of fear and pressure. And sooner or later, you might be get yourself either exhausted or rebelling against this pressure, doing things which are counterproductive, putting down practice, avoiding your cushion, doing mindfulness in a very superficial way, because you've touched mindfulness as a tool of fear or pressure. Yeah. And what we actually did through this is we heightened dukkha in our lives. We heightened suffering and pain. So I sat down and I thought about myself, well, if I don't trust this pressure, you know, which I grew up with, almost the perspective, the lenses I grew up with, what else could I do? And I was really at a point saying, well, I don't know. I never learned anything else. And then you have, of course, all those lovely books and all those lovely teachers, and they all speak about kindness, and they all speak about care, and then you actually try. And for me, it's a rebellious act to say, I really want myself to be happy. Yeah, the Buddha actually said it so beautifully in the Four Noble Truths. There is suffering. Yeah, life ain't easy. It ain't easy outwards with all those people continuously doing things we would rather not have them doing to us or to others. It ain't easy because there are the elements, there's the water and the floods, and we're just experiencing that right now in Germany. There's so many people having such a loss and being in such a trauma and so much fear around. We have the political situations in so many countries, and of course we're still in the pandemic. Yeah, there is suffering, life ain't easy. And as if this weren't enough, there's the suffering inwardly. Yeah, the mind states which can be difficult, and the thought patterns which can be difficult, and the body which is aching, it just ain't easy. And the turn into friendliness, the turn into acceptance is, yes, it ain't easy, I accept that. That's not my fault, I didn't decide for it not to be easy. I can hold it, I can be with it in awareness, and I don't want to suffer. So what small contributions can I make to suffer less? Yeah. And it starts with perspective. It starts with the qualities we bring into our attention. It starts with what we pay attention to. So I make a couple of examples for this statement, what actually it means for me to say, I wish for myself to be happy. Well, I can say, I wish for myself to be happy in the form of, I wish to meditate. Because I see, I experience for myself, it has the potential to contribute to calm and balance. This is not saying I wish to meditate because my mind is unruly and problematic and I'm thinking too much, and this therefore I need to get my bum on the cushion and meditate. That's a harsh way. That's correcting, a fixing way. No. We say, I want to meditate because I see the support in it. I see the nourishment in it. This is why I'm doing it. And this also means I will deliberately find out ways to meditate, practices, techniques, ways of being with the breathing, which are actually contributing to calm and balance. And I need to find that out with my own discernment. Another example would be to say, I wish to be mindful. Yeah, but not because I read 10 mindfulness books and it's on Vogue and everyone tells me to be more mindful. I have a long-standing assumption that something is wrong with me and all those emotions, I need to be more mindful. But because I say, I wish to bring new patterns of awareness, attention into my life, which are actually dissolving some of the tension, the agitation, the stress in my life. I really wish for this heart, for this mind to be calmer. And I have made the experience that mindfulness can do this for me. Or I wish to become wise, but not because becoming wise is super impressive to others and then I would finally feel others can't attack me so much or hurt me so much because now I'm a wise person. No, but because I say, I want to be able to respond to situations rather to react. I want to have this free sense of freedom, the sense of lightness in my reaction to situations, rather than being driven by compulsive actions. This is what I wish for this being sitting here. And the last one, and here it's connecting with other people, a sense of integrity. I wish to be an integer, whole person. And this includes, for me, I wish to live an ethical way of life. I wish to care for others. I wish to love others. I wish to bring some of the beauty residing within this heart, its capacity for compassion and compassionate action, its capacity to speak out and care about others. I want to bring this into the world because I can. And when I bring my potential into the world, I respect the beauty and I respect the capacities of my own heart. And it's beautiful to live with such a respect, with such a sense of integrity. And integrity means, by the way, in its original sense, it means wholeness. And at times, yes, there will be some resistance against these qualities to say, oh, really, concentration. And then something deeper in the being says, no, 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 you know, you remember, calm and balance were the qualities which we are deeply, deeply looking and longing for. This is why we sit down, not out of a punishment, but we really want calm and balance. Or we say, oh, it would be so easy to blob on the sofa and not be mindful of the inner turmoil. But then something remembers. It can be painful to ignore that inner turmoil. So what are the kind ways to be mindful right now? Because I care for this being. So all these words I just mentioned, the wisdom and the concentration and the mindfulness and all of them, and a couple of others, equanimity, compassion, peace, ease, you name them. Our path is full of them. These words are all ideals. So please, please be careful. In the London subways, I hear this one-liner, which is mind the gap. Please, please mind the gap. Yeah. If you have an ideal like love, equanimity, compassion, please mind the gap. It would be so easy to put it on a high stance and then just compare small little me to ideal out there. And this is the recipe for suffering. Yeah. Comparison is a recipe for suffering. Well, how to work with ideals then? My suggestion, just like we did in the practice, is to take it from the pedestal we put it on to bring it into this situation, here and now. Here and now. What does it mean to be equanimous? Here and now, just like we did. What does it mean to sit with equanimity? What does it mean to bring equanimity to my breathing? What does it mean to have an equanimous conversation? Yeah. What does it mean to be equanimous about this anger inside which is raging? And so on. Ask a question for compassion, ask the question for peace. Embody it in the way you move, in your posture, in your breathing. Embody it in the way you speak, the words you choose, the intentions which you allow to guide your conversations. And use it, such a helpful tool, to discern between the thoughts and the impulses which are worthy being followed, worthy being nourished, and to say those other thoughts, those other impulses, nah, not in alignment with those beautiful qualities which I want to be nourished by. So I better put them aside. So that every idea is actually a form of caring. And to finish this talk, I want to give you the image of the sunflower, which I find so helpful. So I looked out at the window and I planted a sunflower outdoors. And I can observe it, and it's actually turning towards the light, turning towards the sun all day long. And I thought a sunflower is even called sunflower because it's such a close connection with the sun. And what it does in turning towards the sun, it grows. Yeah, it grows in such a beautiful flower. And I thought the same is true for the ideals. An ideal might be the sunlight shining upon us. And we are just like the flowers, just by growing towards this ideal, we're growing. We're growing in the potential of our hearts and the capacities we have. Growing by embodying them day by day by day. But there is no need to touch the sun. The sunflower would actually burn if it grows too close to the sun. And we burn ourselves if we try to become the ideal. It's absolutely enough to break it down into practices of this moment, this moment, this moment. And then to appreciate, please, please appreciate the embodiment of those qualities. If you find a single moment of tender, caring love within the heart, expressing itself in action, words, even a thought, stop and pause and appreciate how beautiful it is that this ideal has found a way to be embodied in this heart. How beautiful is this? And I believe this is the path of learning. Yeah? If I see, oh, actually, my heart is longing for freedom. And actually, I notice now that just by not acting upon somebody who's snapping at me, I give myself a little sense of freedom. Oh, how beautiful is that? And actually, it's feeling quite good to be free in that way. It's feeling quite good not to react. Let me do that again. What other opportunity could I bring in this sense of freedom or the sense of balance? So we learn if we acknowledge the small good which is already residing within us. And if we cherish that and if we appreciate that, the thought so easily comes up, let me do that again. Let me do that again because it feels good to do so. And we're allowed to enjoy our practice. Okay, thank you for listening. Let's have a quiet minute before we continue with the questions and answers. May we all not be afraid to have ideals. May we all embody these ideals in the speaking, in the action, in the thinking, so that they can nourish and benefit us. May we all deeply appreciate the beauty and the love which is already residing within us, within our hearts, our bodies, our minds. Thank you for listening. So, you're very much invited now to ask questions, to come up on screen if you want to. And just a little encouragement. It's so beautiful to be with you here tonight. And we are embodying the quality of generosity tonight, which is just saying trust. We're also embodying the quality of trust, saying, Sangha Life is offering these sessions for free. Everyone can come. You know, I can just invite students of mine and invite you to come again. And it's beautiful that everyone can join, no matter who you are, where you're coming from, what your work is, what your background is. Just come and listen and be together and share the Dharma. And such a beautiful way to be together with open doors and with no limits, especially no financial limits. So let's keep this principle alive together. And if you can, any small contribution, is very much welcomed. And I want just to say a big thank you to all of you who already gave to Sangha Life and gave to me so generously in the past and might do so as well tonight. Okay, thank you for listening. Now it's up to you. And I invite critical questions, I invite inquiries, just feel free to use the ask a question box and or come up on screen and Caroline will. And then I think it's best if you put into the chat on the right if you want to come up on screen. I'd be happy to have an inquiry with you. So someone said, I love the idea of acceptance. Over the years, I keep hearing about the jhanas. This has made me believe I'm a useless meditator. I therefore love your approach, which encourages me to believe in myself and my practice. Yes, yes. The jhanas, actually, the way the Buddha described it, he entered the very first time in his life, the jhanas, when he was sitting under a lovely bush full of flowers, good smell, feeling very protected by his surroundings, having his family close by, and something dropped away. You know, some of the agitation, the restlessness, the worry, that need having to do something, having to be something, that just dropped away. And so the jhanas are coming from a deep sense of well-being. Yeah, bringing together body, heart, and mind in this to this deep sense of well-being. It's not labor. It's not willpower. It's not aggression towards the mind. It's this deep sense of well-being. And I think before this well-being can come, there needs to be acceptance, because we're not plopping on our cushions and there is just, oh, bliss. Yeah, there's a lot to go through to say, oh, the mind is in upheaval. Yeah, that's the way it is. That's the acceptance. And then I'm listening to my mind. What could you need? What could you need in order to calm down, to settle? What could I bring to you? And which would you help to find some ease? And that is our pathway. And by working, caring, caressing all those agitated parts in body, heart, and mind, we eventually find this sense of well-being, which is then the doorway, the pathway to the jhanas. Thank you for asking. Can you suggest some specific techniques to you utilize for acceptance? Yeah. again, I think acceptance sometimes is oversimplified. It's not easy to accept. The more painful, the more identified we are with a certain experience, the more difficult it will be to accept something, really. So my go-to practice for acceptance are actually the Paramaviharas, the four qualities of the heart, of kindness, of compassion, of appreciation, and a sense of balance, equanimity. Before I can accept something, well, acceptance I almost think as a natural state, if not this thought would be, if not this pain would be, if not this reactivity against something I'm experiencing would be present. So I'm working with this reactivity. What do you need to calm down? What do you need in order to allow this thing, this experience, this memory, this regret, this doubt? What do you need to, so that we can almost hold it with spaciousness, with care? And sometimes it's a little warmth to say, yes, my body is hurting and I'm taking care of body, heart, and mind by breathing gently into those areas. Oh, and if I do that, I can actually accept the experience. But it's almost like turning towards that which is making me not accept. Yeah, that which is making me not accept. That might be a physical reaction. That might be a belief, an assumption. It might be an emotion. And looking at that, and then to use those qualities of the heart to say, okay, what can I bring to the situation which is offering a little acceptance? And don't underestimate the spaciousness. Acceptance is also, we don't have to love our headaches, we don't have to love our hurting knees, we don't have to love our anger or our doubtful, overreactive mind. Yeah, we don't have to love them. But sometimes it's almost like to say, oh yes, anger's here, let me just make a lot and a lot and a lot and a lot and even more spaciousness around that. And that can be also in form of acceptance, to say, oh, I'm just like, oh, spaciousness as the airbag system around this, so that it does not overspill into more action of the thought or the body or words. Good. Someone is asking, is there anything as too much kindness and compassion to oneself? I go through cycles of compassion to myself, which gives me a lot of calm and peace. But after a while, I start associating it with not striving for growth. Ah, of not doing enough. Yes, of failing somewhere. What are your thoughts on that? Lovely. Such a great question. So there is a lot of wisdom in the being sometimes, but it almost is incapable of framing certain thoughts in a healthy, in a nourishing way. And this question is such a good example for that. Now let me see if I can dismantle that. So we're paying a lot of compassion towards ourselves and kindness. And this is, darling, this is difficult. Yeah, darling, this is challenging. And we're doing this and it's nourishing. And then after a while, there might be this question coming up to say, is this enough? Yeah, is this enough just to be compassionate? And if the inner critic hijacks that question, exactly, it happens exactly as the person described it. Yeah, shouldn't I be doing it more? Am I failing somewhere? Is this, yeah, this the doubt gets, or not even the doubt, the question of is this enough? Is this enough? A complete way to practice, a holistic way to practice, gets hijacked by the inner critic, which is linking the question to the self-worth. And it's a pity because there was wisdom in the question. Compassion sometimes is resting with ourselves and putting the hand on the heart, and it's just to acknowledge this is hard. This can be so healing at times. And there is a form of active compassion, of active kindness, where we say, darling, darling, what you actually need to develop, what you actually need to bring to your life is a little more clarity, is a little more samadhi, collectedness in the being, so that you're not so easily pushed over the edge into reactivity. So compassion can actually ask, other than just resting and being with myself, what other quality is needed here? Yeah. And if we notice, can discern the helpful question, the helpful doubt in our practice, we can actually make wise steps. So I would encourage you to say, maybe your being has noted that just being compassionate is lovely, but maybe there are other qualities which want to be invited in besides quality, compassion and kindness. Let me have a look. Oh, maybe I want just to add one more thing to that. Having one ideal only, I almost would consider it as an unhelpful or not healthy. I look at ideals like if you get a bouquet of flowers from someone, and there are beautiful different flowers in the bouquet, and they all have their beauty, and so ideals all have their use for us. And we almost need more wisdom than just to apply an ideal. We need the wisdom to say which ideal is appropriate now. Yeah, sometimes it's the compassion, sometimes it's the kindness, sometimes it's the sense of balance, sometimes it's a sense of ease. And I can almost in meditation go inwardly and ask, dear heart, dear body, dear mind, what quality would be supportive today, now? And in my own practice, I practice with a certain quality over a certain stretch of times, a week, two, maybe a month. And then I actually notice how they have been here, supported me, nourished me, and then it's almost like another quality is requested. So be spacious, spacious in holding those ideals. So someone said, I love what you have said about accepting our flaws when meditating. The Buddha reached a state of awakening of enlightenment. So do you imagine that such a state must, oops, gone? Yeah. I'm going to switch that. So do you imagine that such a state must have been temporary or fragile as he was a human just like us? Oh, very good question. What did the Buddha find in the state of awakening, which is still human and still not so easily, not so impermanent, not just so out of the window? I think it's not a state, but it's a form of wisdom. It's a form of relating to our experience to say, this experience is coming in, and I have such a liberation, have such a free way of responding to the situation, which is not pushed and shoved by beliefs and identities and greed and anger, but I'm really a free being. This is the situation, and the heart is open, and the mind is calm enough, and the body is relaxed enough to respond to a situation as a free being. And I think, and the Buddha is the next ideal we're talking about, this is where the path is guiding us to more and more such liberation, to respond to our experiences without losing our peace of mind, without losing our balance of heart, and without losing the capacity to live with from an open heart. That would be my answer. So someone asked, can you help distinguish the feel of acceptance versus resignation? Good question, great. Resignation is giving up on ourselves. To say, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, it doesn't work, I'm confused, I'm in doubt. And rather than accepting this, sometimes all of what practice is to accept that I don't know how to practice right now. I don't know how to be with this state. I need to learn. Resignation says, I'm not worth it. I'm not worth putting more energy into the process. I'm just giving up on it. Yeah. All the confusion, all the doubt, it's too much. And I think that's a pity. That's such a pity. The resignation is the moment we're really letting ourselves down. Yeah. To say, oh, rather than accepting the turmoil in the inner and the not knowing and the lack of wisdom, which is there for us so often, we give up on it. We think about ourselves as an unsolvable problem. Acceptance, on the other hand, says, I don't know. I don't know. I will use the mind. The least I can do is to have the mindfulness to learn more, look at this even more. What is happening right now? What is happening? What am I not seeing? What puzzle pieces have been missing to my perception so far? I don't know how to solve that yet. And I think that's quite usual, quite normal. We're all in progress of growing, of learning, of understanding. But I'm not giving up. What I always can do is just to be a little, continue to be mindful. And I might eventually find the puzzle piece which is missing for another step forward. So this would be my understanding about the difference between acceptance and resignation. They both can have in common that it's difficult, that we're in doubt, that we're confused, that we don't see clearly. But the one is going giving up on ourselves, and the other is saying, well, actually, I'm worth it. I'm worth it. Continue to be mindful. I'm worth it. Continue to learn and educate myself about the situation until or not I've found at least one helpful thing to do. Okay. Someone wrote, acceptance is very much helped by compassion, but forgiveness works as a blockage provocation of the ego. How not to feel an imposter of acceptance when inside you still feel a bit resentful in certain situations? Oh, acceptance is by no means immediately forgiveness. I think forgiveness, and I see this in our practice, forgiveness is one form of letting go, and we can't do letting go. It's not a question of the ego and the willpower to let go of something. The being lets go of things if it feels nourished, supported, and safe enough in order to let go. And that is what we're nourishing the being with. And at a certain point, there's a letting go. And sometimes it's a letting go in the form of forgiveness towards someone. Yeah. But we don't do the forgiveness and we don't do the letting go. Acceptance might be something very different. Acceptance at this point might be, yes, I accept I'm still a bit resentful. Yeah. I accept I'm still feeling this. It has become much less, but there is still a sense of resentment in it. And I might see from a point of wisdom that I do not want to act out of this resentment. Yeah, I just don't, out of my sense of integrity, out of my sense of understanding myself that, yes, I find it beneficial, I find it helpful to be a caring person, to be an ethical person. I will not act out of this resentment. Yeah, but it doesn't have to go away. We can be with it. You can just put it on you, the driver, and you put it on the seat next to you, and you hand it a biscuit and a cup of tea and say, okay, as long as you don't grab the steering wheel, you're just happily invited to drive along with me. And you can do this with the anger, and you can do this with the fear. If we entangle ourselves with the idea that all those negative experiences, moods, mind states have to go, oh, we will work on them until the cows come home. That again is the belief, the ideal of I should be a person free from all those difficult mind states. Actually, creating acceptance to say, yes, it's here. Yeah, it has its position. The one thing I'm making sure of is I'm not acting upon them, because I just see so clearly if I do, I get myself and others into a lot of trouble. Yeah, but I don't have to. I don't have to make them go away. And I believe that the forgiving then comes if I do not feel supposed to forgive. I don't feel I have to be the one being forgiving. But maybe when it's a natural process of healing out can take place. Yeah. where I'm learn how to nourish myself and soothe myself and be with myself without the pressure to forgive, then the forgiving at one day can actually happen. But we cannot make it happen by willpower. We just can't. Anyone else having questions? Okay, someone asked, how to have a friend who is so down on themselves without just reassuring them? Yes. The problem is that some people really think by pushing themselves or mentioning what kind of bad people they are just almost... Yeah, either I'm getting the feeling of I'm only accepted if I'm hard on myself. Yeah, if I express appreciation for the beauty within this heart, others might be snapping at us. That might be a pattern from the past. It might be that they have such a huge wish for being appreciated and seen and heard for their beauty, that they just invite us to reassure them by picking on themselves. So it's just, it's very much a social pattern we're experiencing again and again. And I would say it's a, for me it's a, it's almost a mixture between having a warm, steady, calm presence to say, hey, I'm here for you. Yeah, still here for you. And still I'm here for you. And guess what? Today I'm here for you too. And at the same time challenging their perspective. Yeah. To say, well, is this really true what you're telling? Is it really true no one loves you? Because you know what? I'm here for you. I've been here yesterday. I've been here the day before yesterday. So how could this be true? Yeah. So that they actually start shifting their perspective. And again, it's we can't do it for them. We can just point very persistently to the beautiful things in their lives. And are you taking them in? Are you taking in that people are caring for you? Are you taking in the beauty of the new day? Are you taking in the good qualities of yourself? Can you allow, and people oftentimes can't, can you allow them to touch you? Yeah, all the beautiful things inside and outside, all this love and the caring and the sense of friendship, which is within us and around us. And people might be really frightened to let that in. We might all experience it for ourselves a couple of times, how difficult it is to be appreciative of the beautiful within and without. And for some people who are depressed, it can be even more challenging. You know, it feels like the most unnatural thing to do. So be really patient. And take care of yourself. You know, take care of yourself, because we can nurture for a while. And then we need to nurture this heart, this body, this mind, before we can turn back to the other and nurture them. Thank you. Someone said, saying, oh, there's a question at the top. Thank you. Thank you for your skillful teaching. Do you have any suggestions for being with an overwhelmed, traumatized nervous system? Yeah. I have a sense that trying to accept the overwhelm makes it more overwhelming. Yes. So one thing I'm recommend from my trauma sensitive mindfulness background is we don't want to get ourselves into overwhelm. Yeah, when we're in overwhelm, the being actually contracts, the tension adds, the stress level heightens. So my question to you would be, are there any ways of paying attention? We're back to the question, what do I pay attention to? Are there any things you can pay attention to which are lowering the sense of being overwhelmed? If any object, whether it's the body, the breathing, yeah, the emotional state, the vibrancy within the body, and you pay attention to that and you have a feeling, oh, overwhelm is coming up, yeah, or it's getting, the overwhelm is getting worse, stop doing what you're doing. Yeah, you're not supposed to be with your body, your breathing, your mind if it's overwhelming you. There are many, many, many more anchors. One thing people with a traumatic background really can work with is the outer. I invite you to do mindfulness of your senses. People often benefit from a practice of looking around in the room, really allowing the gaze to be open and soft, and take in all things which are, for example, red, and to linger the gaze there. And you find five things which are blue, and then you find five things which are green. And then you listen to all the sounds you can listen to, and really make anchor your attention in the outer, because at times the inner can be much more frightening and dangerous in our perception than the outer. So please shift the attention towards something which gives you more a sense of ease. Another thing which you can potentially do and try out is to see what you can appreciate and what is beautiful and what feels safe, yeah, in the outer or in the contact with another person. Really sitting down and recollecting, like we do in practice of appreciation, to say, have there been any moments today which have made me feel really safe and or calm or appreciated or loved or cared for? And then to really bring the situation back to your mind and to linger, resonate with that. And to see whether this is making any difference to the overwhelm. But please, please, if within any practice for all of you, anywhere a sense of overwhelm comes up, back off. Not, as I said, this is creating more dukkha and not more release and openness. Okay, thank you. So, let me see if there's any more questions. What has resonated with me is the dwelling in the mind on painful thought and feelings which make me angry. This is my reaction to a specific person. I see the danger of becoming a suffering, angry person. I want to be free of this. How can I refocus? Yes, lovely. It resonates with the question we just had. What I love to do is to see, wow, there's this anger inside. There's this reactivity to this situation, this person. There's this fear to this situation or person, or you name it. Yeah. And if I get too close, yeah, it's getting just, I can't hold it. I'm almost, my vessel of mindfulness, my vessel of awareness is too small. I just get reactive. I need enough wisdom to see I can't be with this experience right now. It's overwhelming again. So let me turn towards something else. If you have a feeling that any physical pain, emotional pain, or any thought pattern is just too much to handle, you redirect your attention to something which is easier to handle. That's the go-to practice for me. If it's some area within the body, let's say a very contracted chest area or a very tight body or a pain in the knee or something, are there any places within your body which feel relatively comfortable, relatively easy? If there is any emotion within you which feels overwhelming, might be the anger. So there's the anger, and then there are the overspilling thoughts on the anger to say, wow, can't be with this anger right now. You know, it's just overwhelming me, just creating more and more thoughts. Well, we acknowledge that, we accept, can't be with the anger right now. But actually, if I go to my breathing, I got this sense of, oh, wow, spaciousness here. And spaciousness was actually what I was looking for, which is nourishing me. And I rest with the spaciousness in the sense of breathing. Or you might want to dance it out. You know? Sometimes the anger comes from a sense of helplessness. And then if you get into mindfulness of dancing and you dance up and down your living room and you get a feeling of, oh, look, at I have so much space to dance and I can move my body, this sense of empowerment is actually what you were looking for. And then you be really mindful of the movement you make. Yeah. So refocus on something which is actually settling and calming the being, rather than getting yourself more and more into the thoughts of anger, which you can't handle because it's overwhelming at the moment. I hope this was helpful. Any more questions as we're coming to the end of the session? Okay. I'm curious about ideas you have for, where's it gone? I'm curious about ideas you have for applying this kind of compassionate teachings of acceptance during the time of fatigue, middle of the night, when otherwise not at my best during the day. This has been my recent challenge. Yes. The first thing is to accept that we can't sleep right now. And then the mind comes and says, hey, if you don't sleep right now, you won't be are in shape tomorrow, everything will go wrong, and to say, well, let's wait. Yeah, let's wait. Just accepting I'm not able to sleep. For many people, that means getting up in the night, making themselves a cup of tea. Yeah, accepting I'm not sleeping at the moment. And to notice if I don't sleep and I let my attention run wild, it might go into some thinking and some fearful thoughts, some angry thoughts, whatever it is, which keeps the being from being rested and settled enough. Yeah, there's usually a pattern, a train of thoughts connected with this. Get out of it. Don't give in. Don't feed these thoughts. The Buddha said it, what you think frequently will become even more frequently in the future. Cut the circle, cut the cycle, do something different. Yeah. Get out of bed, have a cup of tea, read a book which is giving you some new impulses, inspirations, and then see if you can get back to bed later. So this would be my sense of accepting the fact that you can't sleep right now, and don't fight it, don't push it, don't force it. We can't fall asleep with our willpower. So we're taking actually care of the being, find out all ways of caring for the being, which is soothing, calming it down in the middle of the night. Okay. So, any more new questions I might have overlooked? Okay. Well, you are very, very much welcome to join us next week. We're going to talk about the inner critic. And the inner critic comes with so many facets and phases. It comes as a discursive thought pattern, which some of you might know. It comes with a pressure on the being, on the heart, to do certain things. It might be connected to our sense of self-worth. And it's very worthwhile to work with this pattern of the inner critic. And we're going to do that from Monday to Friday next week. I'm just inviting you to come whenever you have time or to listen to it online afterwards. And some other thing I want you to invite on, I have still places left on the beautiful Dharma Yatra, our eco-pilgrimage in southern Germany. And we're going to travel from the 7th to the 17th of August through southern Germany. And we're going to have meditation and cooking together and sleeping in tents and sharing the Dharma together, actually live the Dharma together. And if you're interested, I'll just send you the homepage for you to have a look and get a sense of what we're doing together there. Okay, so I hope very much to see a couple of you next week, and I wish you a wonderful evening, and maybe just find out some ideal to pick and embody for this evening until you go to bed. And I would love to hear how this is working for you. Okay, thank you so much for being here tonight.